So we're reading from the Bhagavad Gita as it is, chapter 13, Nature, the Enjoyer and Consciousness, text number 4. Tat kshetram yasya yadriccha. Doesn't sound very convincing. We'll try it again. This should be a pretty easy verse. Tat kshetram yatscha yadriccha tat yadvikariyatascha sachayo yatprabhavascha tat samasenameshinu tat kshetram yatscha yadriccha yadvikariyatascha sachayo yat prabhavascha tat samasena meshinu. Tat kshetram yascha yadriccha yad vikariyatascha yat sachayo yat prabhavascha tat samasena meshinu tat kshetram yascha yadriccha yadvikariyatascha sachayo yat prabhavascha tatsamasena meshinu. Ladies. Tat kshetram yatscha yadriccha yadvikariyatascha sachayo yat prabhavascha tatsamasena meshinu. Tut, that, easy word to learn in English. Just add the H and to the tut, and you get it, that. Kshetram, field of activities. Yat, what? Cha, also. Yadrik, as it is. Bhagavad Gita Yadrik. Cha, also. Yat, having what? Vikari, changes. Yataha, from which? Cha, also. Yat, what? Sa, he, cha, also, ya, who, yat, having what? Prabhava, influence, cha, also, tat, that, samasena, in summary, may, from me, Srinu, understand. So this is a unique verse in Bhagavad Gita. It probably has more words than any other verse in the Bhagavad Gita, and it's probably the shortest verse. As all these cha is repeated in twice in the first line, once in the second line, twice in the third line. So it's five times we have the word cha. Yad is used a few times. Anyhow, let's see what it says. Now please hear my brief description of this field of activities and how it is constituted, what its changes are, whence it is produced, who the knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. Purport. The Lord is describing the field of activities and the knower of the field of activities in their constitutional positions. One has to know how this body is constituted, the materials of which this body is made, under whose control this body is working, how the changes are taking place, where from the changes are coming, what the causes are, what the reasons are, what the ultimate goal of the individual soul is, and what the actual form of the individual soul is. One should also know the distinction between the individual living soul and the super soul, their different influences, their potentials, etc. So does anyone know all that? One just has to understand this Bhagavad Gita directly from the description given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all this will be clarified. But one should be careful not to consider the Supreme Personality of Godhead and everybody to be one with the individual soul, the jiva. This is something like equating the potent and the impotent. So the verse again. Tat-chetram yat-shayadrik-cha yad-vikarya-tasvyat-sachayo-yat-prabhavas-cha tat-sama-sena-meshinu. Now please hear my brief description of this field of activities and how it is constituted, what its changes are, once it is produced, who that knower of the field of activities is, and what his influences are. Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutai Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Tanamane Namaste Sarasvatam Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Shunivadi Paskatyade Siddharne. The very beginning of Bhagavad Gita, Krishna has explained that we're not the body. You probably heard that before. That the body is always changing, and yet the soul who's conscious of the body is always the same. But there's not much detail given at the beginning what it means by the body. And later on in the Bhagavad Gita, there is more of an explanation of the soul. For instance, in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells us, at least indirectly, what the soul is like, where he says, Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dapati bhavaka, chayanam kledi antyapo, nishoshiti bharata. Nainam chindanti shastrani, nainam dapati bhavaka, chayanam kledi antyapo, nishoshiti marata. The soul can't be cut to pieces by any weapon, nor burnt by fire, nor moistened by water, nor withered by the wind. Therefore, the soul is indestructible. Krishna goes over the different elements, and none of them affect the soul, although they certainly affect the gross, or at least the gross body we have. Now, the body also has a subtle element, which is not explained so much in the Bhagavad Gita, except for indirectly, where Krishna says, Udarat atmanatmanam atmanam avasadayat atmaiva yatmano bandura atmaiva ripur atmana. That a person has to elevate himself by his own mind, not degrade himself. The mind is a friend of the conditioned soul and his enemy as well. And then, well, actually so many explanations. Indriyani mano buddhir astidishtanam uchite eteravimoha yatyesha gyanam vritti dehinam. The senses, the mind, and the intelligence are the sitting places of lust, which veils the real knowledge of the living entity and bewilders them. So there's a whole psychological explanation of how the mind's working. What's the nature of the intelligence? Everything is explained in Bhagavad Gita. The amazing thing is when devotees read Bhagavad Gita and actually follow it, and still they want to go to college and study psychology, which is quite surprising, because the actual real psychology is explained in Bhagavad Gita. All the other psychologies are just mental speculations at best. But here Krishna will define things in a slightly different way. We might know that the Bhagavad Gita is divided into three different sections. The first section this is an introduction to the Bhagavad Gita, the first chapter. And then the first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, the nature of the soul is explained, as well as the different processes, karma yoga, jnana yoga, and astanga yoga, by which the soul can gradually become liberated and become conscious of Krishna. The middle six chapters, they deal with the nature of pure devotional service to Krishna, and the last six chapters deal with jnana yoga, the knowledge necessary to fix us in devotional service. The nature of the mind, the material mind, is always giving us doubts. Even when we're in ecstasy one moment, the next moment the mind is giving us doubts. Why are you so ecstatic? You're wasting your time. You should do something practical. So the nature of the mind is always to, the material mind is always to put doubts. You know, why are you spending so much time chanting Hare Krishna? You can be doing something more productive like making money or at least go to the movies. And the only thing to counteract the doubtful mind is knowledge and ultimately realization. Krishna will explain that in the Bhagavad Gita also, in the verse that, let's see, what is that verse? The 15th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, where Krishna says something about Udvamalamadakshakam ashvatam pravar avyam shadam siyasya bharanani yastvam vedasavedavit. There we go. Narupam asyeha tato palabhyate nantan nachadirna chasam pratishta ashvatam enam savirudam ulam asanga shastrena dridena chitva tatakvatam tat parimagitavyam Isminkata nani vartate buya, tadeva chadyam purusham prapadye, itak pariti paritas purani. That the real form of this tree cannot be perceived in this world, nor can we know where its foundation is or where it's coming from. But with the sort of knowledge, one must cut down this strongly rooted tree with the weapon of detachment. So by discrimination and by proper knowledge and by detachment and renunciation, in other words, we have to sharpen our renunciation and our renunciation and detachment with a weapon of knowledge and discrimination. So the whole idea of finding out how this body is working is to detach ourselves from our anxiety over what's happening with our material circumstances. I'm sure most of us feel a little anxiety sometimes. That's when we're conscious of what's happening in our material circumstance. I don't think anyone's thinking, my material circumstance is perfect. I couldn't ask for a better material circumstance. If only this could go on forever. So everyone's in anxiety. There's always something going wrong with the material body that we got to fix, and we fix that, something else goes wrong. Everyone could actually spend their whole life just going between the doctor and the dentist and the eye specialist and the ear specialist. You can spend your whole life just circulating between your teeth and your ears and your eyes and everything else in the body. And then, of course, there's the other problems that people don't cooperate with us. They're not ready to fulfill our every desire, and that makes them problems. They don't seem to be surrendered to us as they should. And then the weather doesn't cooperate. We're always in danger of some kind of catastrophe, like it's getting winter, which I guess in Slovenia is, to some people, would be a catastrophe. The summer has ended. Everyone's, oh, the summer's ended. Therefore, the material circumstances are never 100% favorable. And even when we go to the heavenly planets, in the Bhagavatam it says, that even Indra, although he enjoys a fantastically long life compared to us, that he's always having difficulty. Sometimes he has to live in a lotus flower for millions of years. Sometimes some witch is chasing after him. Sometimes he gets kicked out of his kingdom. Bali Maharaj takes over. So we think, well, let me go to the heavenly planet so I can enjoy a vacation for a long period of time. But there's no guarantee that when you get there, Rich Asura won't be around stomping on the demigods. You may find yourself beneath one of his lotus feet. Your one's term in the heavenly planets may be squashed. So there's no guarantee that one will actually enjoy in the heavenly planets. And even if one does enjoy there, there's always the anxiety, like when you have a very nice ice cream cone. And it's exactly all the flavors you love. But every time you lick it, it disappears. And therefore, although there's some enjoyment associated with licking the ice cream cone, there's also some pain that it's going to disappear soon. And I'll be left with nothing but air to lick. Therefore, even life in the heavenly planets is disturbing. So one should understand the nature of material existence. So Krishna has described that. The nature of the mind, the nature of the intelligence, the nature of the physical body. And he'll summarize it here in this 13th chapter, which I don't want to tell you too much because that's a future verse. But it's Mahabhutana Hankara, Buddhyabhyakta Evacha, Indriyani Disaikam Cha, Pancha Chendriya Gochara, Indriyarteshu, Ichchadvesha sumutena, ichchadvesha sukham dukham, sangates chadritadriti, sangates chetanadriti, etat chetram samasena, savikara mudarita. So Krishna says the five great elements, the false, mahabhutana, ahankara, the false ego, buddhi, the intelligence, the saikam cha and the saikam is avyaktam cha, the unmanifest, indriyani the saikam cha, and the 10 working senses, the knowledge acquiring senses, pancha chendriya gochara. So these are the gross physical body. And then Krishna says, ichcha dvesha, attachment and aversion, ichcha dveshas, sukham dukham, happiness and distress. So we're thinking that this have this attachment and aversion, that's me. All right, I'm not the body, but my emotions, that must be me. Or my happiness, this is really me feeling happiness. Or distress, this is me feeling distress. We're actually caught up in driti, chetana, consciousness, and driti, determination, conviction. But these are all being supplied to us by the material nature. The whole drama, the whole experience we're having subtly and grossly, even our emotions, which we actually think are coming from ourselves, they're not really coming from ourselves, they're being supplied to us by the material nature. Generally, people create these virtual realities, and they enter into it, just like going to a movie. It's like a kind of virtual reality. You're sitting there, you're imagining that you're there, and you're trying to feel what the actors are feeling. They're trying to convey some feelings. But nothing can be a better virtual reality than what Krishna has created. Because even the feelings, they're all part of a virtual reality. It has nothing to do with our actual self. It's just something we're experiencing, being supplied by the material nature. Therefore, even for a self-realized soul who's constantly meditating upon Krishna, or at least is on a higher platform of focusing one's consciousness on Krishna, it's not like the material subtle mind suddenly just goes away. It's there with all its flavors. But the self-realized soul is just probably describes it as like a coconut when you have a coconut, the inside, you shake it and you hear the water sometimes, but you don't really, the shell is still part of the coconut. But after the coconut becomes ripe, then the shell drops out, and you shake it, you can actually hear the shell. So similarly, it's not that while we're in the material body that there won't be any material emotion supply, or maybe for a person who's actually on the platform of pure consciousness, there is no material consciousness. But generally speaking, even while we're trying to cultivate Krishna consciousness, even when we experience Krishna's presence at times, still the material covering is there, even on the subtle level. So we may have some influence, feelings, or happiness or distress, but the self-realized person doesn't identify with them. That will be explained in the 14th chapter, where Arjuna says, what are the symptoms of the self-realized person? And Krishna says, although he looks on a pebble, stone, and gold with an equal eye, etc., etc., and pravritim cha, prakasham cha, nivritim, prakasham cha, nivritim cha, pravritim cha, prvritim cha, prakasham cha, prvritim cha, moham eva cha pandava, nidveshti sam pravritani, nivritani kamshiti. So even when there's illumination, in other words, sometimes everything becomes clear to us. We know exactly what's happening. And sometimes, prakasham, the material mind may apparently come under some kind of attachment. Moham. And sometimes we're very cloudy. And then we think, oh, I'm in Maya. Sure we're in Maya because we're identifying ourselves with Maya. And we've surrendered to Maya. But as soon as one thinks about the orders coming to simple succession, one can remember the Acharyas and the six Goswamis and the Panchatattva and Krishna. Then yes, our mind is covered, but we're not in Maya anymore because we're in Krishna consciousness. It's not that Krishna consciousness is just automatically supplied to us. We have to want to be Krishna conscious in spite of the fact whatever our subtle and gross bodies are going through. So we shouldn't lament, oh, I'm in Maya. Of course we should lament that we're in Maya, but we shouldn't simply stay in Maya. That even if our consciousness is being cloudy or is disturbed by some reason, then we have to try to become Krishna conscious. And therefore we'll become aloof from whatever reaction the mind is going through. Is that clear? A little hard to understand, but the idea is that if we're actually centered within our heart upon Krishna and his instructions, then whatever our external feelings are, it will really be very much important to us. And eventually the fire of Krishna consciousness will burn away all the different feeling, material feelings and emotions that we're going through and replace them with spiritual feelings and emotions. It's not that the self-realized person has no emotions. He has real emotions rather than the artificial material emotions that cloud us over and we identify ourselves with. And then Krishna will explain about not only tat-kshetram yat-svayati yad-vikara, all the different transformations. Krishna will claim in Bhagavad Gita that the material nature is changing everything. It's not that we're changing everything, although we'd like to think we are, but actually it's the material nature who's doing it all. We have no power to do anything because we're beyond the material nature. It's like, although we're not the sun, but compared to the sun has an influence, but it doesn't directly do anything on this planet. So the material nature is changing everything. And what is our influence in the material energy? What is our influence here? We have the capacity to desire. So that, well, here in this chapter, I think this, that the material nature is the cause of all activities and effects, or the living entity is the cause of all suffering and enjoyment. So, according to our desire, we can wind up in the material world suffering, or we can wind up so-called enjoying, or we can wind up transcendental. It just depends upon what we accept. If we accept knowledge, if we associate with people in the mode of ignorance, then we'll get all kinds of knowledge in the mode of ignorance, how horrible everything is, and how the only way to be happy is to take alcohol and gratify the senses. So we hear from such people, that's what our desires will focus on. And if we associate with people in the mode of passion, then we'll hear about how the glories of making money and improving one's material situation, how you can become happy by getting a bigger house and a better car and enjoying a better restaurant, etc., etc. So then we decide, yes, let me try for that. And the mode of goodness, we can hear about purification. We should eat the right food, breathe the right air, do the right exercise, relate to people in the mode of goodness, without envy, tolerate people, try to serve people, try to appreciate them, how to win friends and influence people. So we hear that knowledge, we can try that out. And that's called happiness in the material world, free from the anxieties of lust, anger, and greed, and delusion, and madness, and enviousness, and everything else. But we can also become transcendental. That is, we can think about Krishna. And we can learn the process of thinking about Krishna through the process of devotional service. And that's what we're trying to do. Of course, we're trying also to come act in the mode of goodness, because the mode of goodness is more conducive for helping us to concentrate our minds upon devotional service and Krishna consciousness. And then we'll hear about knowledge. What is actual knowledge? Generally, people think understanding the interaction of the modes of nature, that's knowledge. Or the interaction of the gross physical elements is knowledge. But Krishna doesn't agree with that. He says knowledge is Amadi dvam, adambi dvam, ahimsa, shanti, arjavam, acharya, pasanam, socham, stiryam, atma, vinigraha, indriyarte, shuvairagyam, anahankar, evacha, janma, mrityu, jara, vyadi, dukkha, dosha, nudarshana, asaktena, bishvanga, putra, dara, grihadishu, nitya, chani, samachityatvam, ishta, nishta, papadishu, maya, ichayana, yogena, bhaktya, vicharini, Viktadesha sevatvam arate jnana samsidim. Adyatma jnana nityatvam tatva jnanarta darshanam. Etai jnanamiti proktam agana yadatonyataha. So that's knowledge. And anything besides that is ignorance. So knowledge, Prabhupada emphasizes in his purport, knowledge begins with amadidvam, humility. And what are the two essential elements of knowledge? Does anyone remember? Dum, dum, dum. At least you will learn something today. The two essential elements of knowledge is accepting a bona fide spiritual master and rendering devotional service. But the basis of that, Prabhupada will tell us, is, what does he say about humility? Beginning from practicing humility up to the point of realization of the Supreme Truth, personality of Godhead, this process is just like a staircase, beginning from the ground floor and going to the top floor. So the beginning is knowledge. One should know that we're not the laws of creation. Although we'd like to think ourselves the possessors and the doers, but it's not true. And in order to realize that, to find that out, we have to accept a bona fide spiritual master coming in disciplic succession, not just as a formality, but to actually receive the knowledge with submission. Everything depends upon submission of the knowledge. We have to learn how to become submissive. But submission is something voluntary. It actually ultimately comes from gaining knowledge. Knowledge means experience of a higher taste, of a higher experience. Then we become submissive. We're generally submissive to love, just like Krishna is submissive to love. We can't demand Krishna to surrender to us. Krishna becomes submissive. I demand it. But Krishna is submissive to love, and we're also submissive to love. So if we get a higher taste, then naturally we become submissive. If we hear the holy name and we become over flooded with bliss and pleasure and love, then naturally we want to hear more of the holy name. And similarly, in the material world, if we execute our activities in such a way as to realize some higher state of consciousness, then we become more and more submissive to those instructions that help us become submissive. Therefore, humility is necessary, because if we think we are the Supreme, we are the center of the universe, there's no reason becoming submissive to anyone, because I am the standard that everyone should surrender to. And even if I'm not there yet, in the future, somehow or another, I have so many good assets now, I just invest them in material energy, and certainly my assets will grow, and one day I will become the greatest of them all. Mirror, mirror on the wall, who is the greatest of them all? So beginning humility and then pridelessness and nonviolence, then one becomes simplicity. One becomes qualified to become submissive and inquire submissively to gain some knowledge about how to practice devotional service to gradually become purified and realize Krishna. And then there is all kinds of processes. And then finally, one, well, accepts devotional service and comes to the platform of understanding Krishna in truth. So that's called knowledge. And part of that is explained. Amadi dvam, adambi dvam, ahimsa, shantir, arjuna, acharya pasanam, socham, cleanliness, stiryam atman vidnigraha, fortitude, indriyarte shuvairagam, detachment from the material sense gratification, anahankara, without false ego, janma murti dharavyadi dukho doshna darshanam, understanding the misery of accepting birth, death, old age, and disease. So these things are all necessary. Just like in the classes, sometimes we like to hear nice stories about Krishna. Krishna is playing his flute. He's herding the cows. And then someone else gives a class about how miserable the material world is. We're all, God, so depressing. But this knowledge is necessary. As Prabhupada writes, that without understanding the miseries of old age, disease, and death, there's really no impetus to make any progress in devotional service. True, our real progress will be there when we can fix our minds upon Krishna and remember deeply his transcendental pastimes and actually experience them directly with our transcendental senses. But in order to do that, we have to become purified. We have to become detached from sense gratification. We have to learn how to focus our minds upon Krishna and not on some other conception of our existence. So this is all knowledge, and it explains in this 13th chapter, and then intricacies of activities and what the soul is and how the super soul is pervading everything, that these are all Krishna's bodies that we see. They're not our bodies, they're Krishna's bodies, and Krishna's interacting with the soul and fulfilling their desires according to what they deserve, etc., etc. And then Krishna will summarize this 13th chapter by saying, what is knowledge? Yavat sanjayate kinchit, satvam stavir jangamam, Kshetram Kshetri Tata Kritsnam Prakashiti Bharata. That one should understand that there's only two things, the knower and the field of existence. And that's it. Simple. That there's only two things in this world. There is the knowers, the soul and the super soul, and then there's the different varieties of material existence. And that's it. And then that one who can see the super soul accompanying all souls and all bodies, and knows that neither the soul nor the supreme soul within the destructible body is ever destroyed, he can actually see. So our friend Krishna is with us, and we're eternal. Krishna is eternal. Everyone's eternal. There's no worries. And one who can see the super soul is equal to everyone within everybody, does not degrade himself by his mind, thus approaches the supreme destination. So one who sees that everyone doesn't have the same desires, sometimes, most of the time in the material world, people's desires are misdirected, and therefore they get bodies that are according to their desires. And therefore they have to suffer, or so-called enjoy sometimes here. But Krishna is equal to everyone. And as soon as one dovetails one's desires with Krishna's desires, and one becomes liberated. And everyone has an equal opportunity to do that. And then Krishna goes a whole thing about how the soul's not doing anything. He's really not entangled. He's situated in his body. That one who's in Brahman vision, he sees that. Otherwise, he doesn't see that. And then he says, Yata prakashya ekam kritsnam lokimam ravi Kshetram Kshetri Tata Kritsnam Prakashiti Bharata. As the sun alone is illuminating all the universe with its sunlight, so the soul situated in the body illuminates the entire body with his consciousness. So it's true, this little tiny soul ourselves, we're illuminating the whole body with our consciousness. And then one who can see the difference between the knowers of the field and the field and knows the process of liberation, he attains to the supreme destination. So we keep in mind we're spiritual souls and that there's a supreme spiritual soul with us and he's making all the arrangements for us. And we understand how to get free from our illusory conceptions and take shelter of Krishna, then we can attain the supreme destination. So in spite of all these elaborate details, the final thing is just that we become aloof from all anxieties about this material creation, and understand our real goal is to attach ourselves to Krishna and become Krishna conscious. And that will solve our problems, not trying to make separate arrangements to solve this problem, that problem, and forget about Krishna while we're doing it. Of course, in the material world, we're accustomed to forget about Krishna. We think it's completely normal. We think that normal existence is to work hard in the material world to solve our problems and get ahead. And once in a while we come to the temple and pray to Krishna to please help us in our material endeavors. And then we think, well, it would be pretty weird to think about Krishna the whole day. Because, you know, I wouldn't have any material life anymore. I'd just be like a slave to Krishna, so. No, actually it's normal to think about Krishna, rely upon him. The problem is we don't realize how important it is. We think we have our lives now in material life, and then we have our Krishna conscious life. And sometimes they meet, but usually we keep them quite separate. Anyhow, I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions? Yes.
Thank you for this lecture. Today is Ekadashi, and we were talking about the mind, and maybe you could tell us how to fix the mind on Ekadashi, be more spiritual directed.
Well, first of all, we have to hear. Ekadashi is supposed to increase our hearing and chanting, because the mind will go whatever we're hearing, that's where the mind will go to. Hearing is a process of feeding our intelligence. So if our intelligence is being fed with spiritual knowledge, then the mind will naturally think about Krishna. And when the intelligence, when the sound is being fed by material sound vibration, then the mind will naturally go to materialistic thoughts. So that's the time to feed our mind more with Krishna conscious literature and hearing and chanting about Krishna. But if we're doing some service and thinking about Krishna, that's also feeding the mind. We're working on the basis of that knowledge, then naturally we're living the knowledge. And that's also good. So either increasing our chanting, increasing our hearing, or increasing our service. At the same time, chanting while we're serving. Is that all right? Yeah.
What about fasting or feasting the mind on Ekadashi?
You mean? Well, if we fast, that's good. If that helps us increase our hearing and chanting. If by fasting we increase our meditation, our stomach, and our anxiety about how to get this day done as quickly as possible so we can finally eat again, then it's not a very good idea. So we should do whatever will help us increase our hearing and chanting. Fasting in itself may help us physically a little bit, maybe, depends on how we perform our activities the next day. Because fasting and then feasting the next day is quite disturbing to the body. On the other hand, if we're fasting and we're not really increasing our hearing and chanting about Krishna, then it has no real value. It may increase our false ego, how austere we are, but it may not have any real value in our Krishna consciousness. On the other hand, if we do fast and we feel lighter and more peaceful and we can, you know, less distracted, and we can focus our minds more on hearing and chanting, then it's very valuable. We want to get a higher taste, actually develop a taste for hearing and chanting about Krishna. And Ekadashi should help that if we follow it properly. Yes?
We spoke about identifying with sense, with emotions and mind and all these things. But what should we identify with them that it will go in the right way?
We should identify ourselves as the servants of the servants of the servants of Krishna. And therefore, we should be enthusiastic. We should look at our mind. What is the mind enthusiastic about? What is the mind depressed about? It should be enthusiastic about becoming Krishna conscious and should be depressed the fact that we're not Krishna conscious. So we should see what our emotions are and why we have them. And then dedicate those emotions to Krishna service. So we can't get rid of them, but we can utilize them properly, just like the body. We can't get rid of the body. We can't just decide, I don't like my body, and walk out of it. But we can utilize it in Krishna service. We have to utilize our emotions also in Krishna service. Anything else? Okay, thank you very much. Grandaraj Bhagavad Gita Ki Jai. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande.